Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbot. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. We got here, but Josh did not make it here. My name is Andrew Dalbot. I'm with Henry, but unfortunately Josh could not be with us today. We are recording on a Saturday morning UK time. Obviously, we'll be looking at the loss slash win to FK Östersund, depending on your viewpoint. And we'll also be looking forward to Sunday's Carabao Cup final against Manchester City. Henry, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've got a big day of sport ahead of me. I've got the Wales game at 2 o'clock, and then big weekend of sport, I should say. The Wales game this afternoon, and then the Arsenal final tomorrow. So I'm hoping to be very, very happy come Monday.
Yep, I doubt that you will be, but there we go.
I was trying to take over Josh's role as the king of optimism, but obviously the result against Östersund has prevented Josh from appearing here today, I think, because there was no optimism to take from that performance whatsoever.
There was very little optimism. I don't think you'll be much more optimistic about the rugby, if I'm honest. But there we go. You alluded to the Östersund game. It was a 2-1 loss on the night. Arsenal obviously had a 3-goal advantage from the first leg. I mean, was it as bad as everybody's saying it is? It certainly felt like it.
I mean, I don't think the two quick goals helped at all. I mean, I was still confident that we would progress, but the performance was so sloppy. I don't think you can blame Wenger for that. I think you simply just have to look at the players and think that passing was so sloppy. I couldn't understand the spacing between our midfield and our defence. I thought Maitland-Niles and Elneny, from a tactical perspective, had an awful game. They didn't protect Rob Holding or Callum Chambers very well, in my opinion. I thought it was very worrying for the most part. We've spoken a few times now about how we seem to lack squad depth, and I think that performance really emphasised that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. It looked like a bit of a lost performance, really, in the sense that I think I said in the play ratings, it was difficult to blame one or two players just because everybody looked so disjointed and unconnected. Like you were saying, like the midfield didn't protect the defence, so Chambers and Holding had a nightmare. But they also had no protection whatsoever. Kolasinac struggled. I think Bellerin struggled. And then even in possession, Arsenal created so little that there was just no support. There was none of that kind of fluid, kind of each component of the team, each aspect of the team supporting one another. It was a very, very sloppy, disappointing performance. It definitely improved in the second half. But again,
it was nothing really to write home about still, was it?
No, it wasn't especially difficult to improve from the first half performance. I think they could have brought me and you on in midfield and they'd have been better in the second half.
Well, they brought Granit Xhaka on and he steadied the ship to an extent, although he played a couple of weird passes which had my heart racing.
Oh, gosh, yeah. He played a couple of terrible passes.
Especially long passes, which he's usually, to his credit, very good at. It's just, it seemed no one was on the same wavelength yesterday. Oh my goodness, that's how bad the performance was. It feels like only yesterday we did it, but it was a poor performance. And I think the sooner we forget about it, the better.
Yes, I am agreed on that one. We'll touch on specifically before we move on. We'll touch on Callum Chambers because he's been coming in for quite a lot of flack, as has Danny Welbeck on social media. Yeah. What did you make of their respective performances and what do you make of the criticism and the vilification that they're getting from a large portion of the fan base?
I'll start with Callum Chambers first. I'm personally a very big fan of his simply because I love what he does in possession. I think he's one of our best, if not our best, I think he's the best centre-back that we have at distributing the ball. I think a lot of his flaws were exposed yesterday because, as I previously alluded to, he was so exposed for the most part. Their second goal, his lack of quickness again showed. I think he's plenty fast enough over a long distance, but quickness has always been a flaw of his. You just think back to Jefferson Montero a few years back. I think he'll be fine. I think some people are just way too trigger happy when it comes to things like this. I can appreciate the fact that it was a poor performance. But you've got to remember, he's still very young for a centre-half. I know that could be used as an excuse, and maybe I am using it as an excuse, but I think we should hold fire on Callum Chambers simply because I think he still can come good. And my viewpoint on Danny Welbeck, besides the chip was awful, the attempted chip, I should say, was awful. But again, I've made my point very clear on him as well. He's limited, technically not as gifted as the majority, if not all of the Arsenal. Well, he's not technically as gifted. And we should play him as a role player, like Manchester United did with Darren Fletcher and Ji-Sung Park. He's very honest. He'll give you 7 to 10 goals a season. Why are we looking at him like he's going to be Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang? It's just not right.
So would you... You say using him as a role player, and I agree. I think he has a skill set that can be very, very useful, very akin to Ji-Sung Park at United, where in those away Champions League games, he was the first player on the team sheet for Ferguson because he loved his energy, his industry, his work ethic. Would you play him on Sunday then against Manchester City in the type of game where attackers who can defend and who are willing to work hard will be extremely important?
That's a very good question. I mean, the game that I always refer to is this game at Stamford Bridge early in the season where we started with, was it Welbeck, Iwobi and Sanchez at Stamford Bridge?
It was Lacazette.
But
Iwobi and Welbeck were either side of him.
And it worked very well for the most part because they nullified partly Alonso and Victor Moses and partly the two outside centre-halves who are integral in bringing the ball forwards and beginning attacks. It's possible that we could do it tomorrow. I haven't really thought about it. I mean, there are so many questions that I have regarding the lineup for tomorrow simply because Manchester City are the superior team, and I guess it depends on Wenger's mindset as to how we line up and how we play. So it's possible, but I do not want to be the one to even take a guess at whether that's likely.
No, I don't think it is likely. I think the fact that he played both games, and I think he play 90 minutes in both games, or the best part of 90 minutes in both games? Having only played 4 minutes of football in 2018 beforehand, or since early January, he played four minutes of football. I think that showed that usually Wenger's quite hesitant in bringing players who have been injured back into the team, but on this occasion he brought Welbeck straight back in and he played 180 minutes or close to 180 minutes in the space of a week. For a player of his injury record, that's quite a lot, and I'm not sure. Really, whether I think that's an indication that Wenger doesn't see him as starting on Sunday. He may be on the bench, but I don't think he'll start. Let's touch on the criticism that he has come in for on social media. I know Hector Bellerin, speaking with the Oxford Union speaks about a week ago, something like that, touched on this, and other players have touched on this. The Arsenal fan base is extremely harsh, of its players, both in terms of they're very quick to praise them and they're very quick to heap quite a lot of expectation, especially on young players. Mm. And they're also extremely quick to rid of that expectation and immediately criticise them if things start going well. You look at Alex Iwobi from, say, 2 years ago to this season, he was heralded as the next big thing and now he's seen as the Antichrist. What do you make of a lot of the volatility of the Arsenal fan base's kind of their perspective of a lot of the players in the squad?
I mean, if you're referring to Arsenal Fan TV, and I know Arsenal Fan TV don't represent the entire Arsenal fan base, but I love the platform. I think the idea behind the platform itself is great. And I think the idea that they should criticize if they feel the desire to criticize is absolutely right, because they pay their well-earned money to do so. And a lot of the points that Hector Bellerin made were correct. I mean, when we do lose, we win more often than we lose since the foundation, or we've won more often than we've lost since the foundation of Arsenal Fan TV. But there is no doubt that their views as a channel exponentially increase when we lose, because of the drama and because of the volatility. I see no issue with it, but it's almost a case of, because of the nature of media and social media, these guys who appear on it, DT and Troops being the prime examples, are celebrities, if you will. And that sounds very weird to say out loud. But to refer back to the question, I don't think it's any different to fanzines or like fan forums that you get online. It's just more public and it's more within the players' timelines, if you will. They have more access to see this criticism. There's probably always been this level of criticism, but it's just more accessible to them as individuals. I think part of me thinks that they need to develop a thicker skin, but then part of me also thinks that, because I see this after every single game, that we need to, as fans, be less volatile, because it's a representation of our club. Obviously, the results on the pitch are the primary, are of the utmost importance. But if we're looking to enhance the reputation of the club, the fans also have a huge role to play. And that's where I have a bit of an issue with it, is if we look at Arsenal Fan TV as the mecca of fan channels, they don't really represent the club in the best way, simply because the hype around them is so big when you consider defeats.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I definitely think there is an argument to be made that, put it this way, if I was a manager, I don't think I'd allow my players to have social media.
Mm.
And that may be a bit harsh, that may be a little bit authoritarian, a little bit, you know, overly stringent, but I wouldn't allow them, because I don't want them to see the vilification that they're getting through those channels. Because like you said, this criticism happened 20 years ago, but it happened down the pub on a Saturday night after the 3 o'clock kickoff, and no player would ever know, and no player would ever hear, and it didn't matter. Whereas now it's on Twitter and on Facebook and you know, Instagram and what have you, and people are commenting on, you know, when Hector Bellerin talks about what he's when Hector Bellerin puts the photo up after the game and says, "Oh, you know, unlucky, bad result, but we tried hard," and then he has hundreds and thousands of replies on Twitter, and they're all streaming down, and all of them are negative, and all of them are berating him. I would just tell my players, you know, I just get off it, just don't go near it, don't read it.
I mean, carry on.
Well, I just like very much like when they say, "Oh, I don't read what the newspapers say." Mm. I think the very same principle can be said for social media as well.
I mean, it's a case of players should they use it also as well, Bellerin in particular, for brand endorsements as such. But there should be a method for them. I mean, I'm aware of the fact that Granit Xhaka had to disable comments on an Instagram post not too long ago because he was receiving death threats. It's a bit ridiculous when it gets to that level.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might be a case where this is, I have no political power per se with Twitter, but it might be a case of that they ask for comments to be disabled on certain posts that they do. But again, what you said is completely right. There is just more access to this criticism now, and it's just a drawback of living in this day and age as a footballer.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Last thing to touch on the Europa League section before we take a break. The draw came out on Friday lunchtime, about 12 o'clock, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal got drawn against AC Milan. What are your initial feelings on the look of the draw or the unlook of the draw, depending on your perspective?
I mean, personally, I would have much rather have faced a lesser opponent, if you will. But then again, you look at how we dealt with Östersunds, and it's an argument that I've seen plenty on Twitter that, oh, now that we've got a big team, we might actually turn up for both games, which is possibly true. I mean, we'll likely see our best lineup in both ties for the last 16. Is it the round of 16? Yeah, it's the round of 16, isn't it?
Yeah, round of 16.
Because this is crunch time now. Forget top four. This is what we've got to be aiming for. A lot of the other bigger teams in the competition got away with lesser opponents. So that doesn't really fare well for us if we even progress. But I'm excited because it's two European heavyweights, if you will. Again, that I said that with a bit of a cringe, and I saw a perfect analogy of it on Twitter. Two lions in 2008 and two cats in 2018. I'm looking forward to it because they've got some great players. They've got Gattuso as manager as well. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I definitely think the name is tougher than the opponent.
Mm.
You hear the name AC Milan and you think, oh gosh, that sounds horrible. Mm. But actually, and they are in a decent run of form at the moment, which should be said. They're not as good as they used to be. And there are some other teams in that draw that could have been far worse. You know, Lazio are above them in Serie A, but they're about 8 points above Milan. Borussia Dortmund, Atletico Madrid, even a team like Bilbao or RB Leipzig. Mm,
Leipzig knocked out Napoli, didn't they?
Yeah, or you've got the Russian teams where you've got quite a lot of travel, or even over to Ukraine or something like that. So there were only really, I would say, two or three teams that were relatively comfortable draws. Actually, the rest of them weren't as easy as they looked whatsoever. So I think, for me personally, the reputation is bigger than the actual difficulty of the opponent. Mm. And I do think the argument of complacency is actually a fairly decent one. Arsenal cannot afford to be complacent against AC Milan, as they were against Östersund, as they have been caught out in previous seasons. Especially in the group stages of the Champions League, they were always complacent, weren't they? And then they'd end up finishing second. And then they'd be like, oh, we can't believe we've been drawn against Barcelona again.
I mean, I'm just looking at it from a case of, you look at the teams left this year in the Europa League, and I'm not entirely familiar with the Europa League last season, but I would be very interested to see the lineup at this point of the competition last season and who Manchester United could have faced, because I don't think they had this many top quality teams to deal with.
No, I think you look at the Liverpool year, where they got to the final and they lost to Sevilla, they had to come through quite a tough draw. They obviously beat United. They had to beat Borussia Dortmund with the really late Lovren goal. And then even Sevilla in the final is a tough draw. Mm. So there is, if you are unlucky, you can get a bad run. But I think really Milan is not as bad as they sound anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to play one of the big teams at least, or we were going to have to play one of the bigger teams at least in this competition anyway. So if we can get rid of a direct opponent now, great.
Yeah, I think Napoli going out was big for Arsenal. I think that's because they are an excellent team. They've got a very good chance of winning Serie A this year. And I think the draw for the round of 32, not only was it good for Arsenal because it put them up against a fairly comfortable opponent, or what should have been a fairly comfortable opponent, but it also drew some big teams against each other, which means that they were going to be knocked out, like Leipzig and Napoli. So, again, we'll have to see. It's exciting, not so sure. Mm. I think it doesn't quite feel like the Europa League's got started yet, does it?
Because, no. But when prior to the first leg against Milan, that it'll be crunch time then, for sure.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it, actually. I think the Europa League could be quite enjoyable for once. Right, we will take a short break. And when we come back, we will discuss Sunday's Carabao Cup final, in which both of us are rather nervous, I think that's fair to say. We'll see you in just a moment. Hello and welcome back to the second part of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalzell. I'm here with Henry. Unfortunately, Josh can't be with us, which, given our fairly pejorative disposition, may be a problem for this upcoming few discussions, because we're going to be talking about the Carabao Cup final on Sunday afternoon. We're speaking Saturday lunchtime currently, so that gives you a kind of the news cycle at the moment. And so if we do say things that are a little bit out of kilter, then that is why. Henry, I'm not even going to ask how confident you are. How nervous are you for the impending pummeling that Arsenal are facing?
I'm very nervous. But the thing is, as I told you during the break, I wouldn't be surprised if we get absolutely walloped. And I wouldn't be surprised if we scrape a 1-0 win. I can't mentally prepare for this game. I'm certainly going to be hiding behind some pillows or a sofa. But I can't mentally prepare for this game. It's not like Östersund's where I expected us to go through and then I had to revert to hiding behind the pillows. I think I'm just going to be hiding behind the pillows and then possibly coming out or just dropping deeper behind the pillows.
I think it's a little bit better in this situation where you're kind of waiting for it. You're kind of expecting it. Whereas against Östersund, that was really peak Arsenal, wasn't it? It was just really completely capitulating exactly when they should have really walked away with it.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, as a preliminary question, are you concerned by the fact that Wigan beat them? And are you worried about this backlash that people have been talking about on Twitter?
I mean, it could work for us and it could work against us. They might have the bit between their teeth and really come out of the blocks quickly and really put us to the sword. Or it might have had a bit of an impact on them. I think, personally, it'll really motivate them. And that wouldn't bode well for us. But we showed at the Etihad, we were in the game for large parts of it. And it was a lack of, well, it was a lapse in concentration that really cost us the game. So part of me is very nervous, but part of me is thinking, I don't know, we're better in knockout form or in a knockout format. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, and even for the third goal, for example, it was offside, which was somewhat frustrating. But more than that, there was Arsenal had just scored with Lacazette and they were looking quite dangerous. Yeah. They were on the front foot. And had that gone a different way, then maybe the momentum that they had in that second half, maybe that would have carried them through to nick a point or something like that. It was closer than the 3-1 scoreline suggested. Yeah. Having said that, in the first half, City did create some good chances they probably should have scored. Probably should have scored more from. Let's delve into this a little bit deeper. We'll start on the Arsenal side. How do you think they will set up and how do you think they should set up? We'll start with what you think Wenger will do and then we'll move on to perhaps what we would do.
I actually think he'll line up with three at the back. The more and more I've been hearing it, the more and more I think he'll do it. Because we've alluded to it. We seem to have an abundance of defenders, but not very many attackers and midfielders who are capable of playing in a game of this magnitude, as the quality for a certain position might not have the adequate depth. So I think he'll actually go with three at the back. And I'd actually like it.
So I would like three at the back. I agree. I think that's, if I was managing Arsenal, that's what I would do. I don't think that's what Wenger will do. He is a back four man. He always has been a back four man. The back three was always a bit of an experiment to distract the players from the controversy and the uncertainty that was threatening to engulf the club.
Yeah.
And Wenger thought, I just need to switch it up. I just need to do something different. And even this year, when he started with a back three, if the game started going badly, he would, in the second half, quite quickly switch to a back four.
Yeah.
And it's always felt like he felt more comfortable in the back four. And I think that will again be the case on Sunday. That's not what I want him to do, but that's what I think he will do. There is a possibility that he does the weird Elneny thing, where he plays this kind of half floater role as a third centre half slash anchoring midfielder, depending on whether Arsenal do or do not have the ball. I know he did that against Chelsea a few weeks ago, didn't he?
Mm.
It didn't really work very well, but it might be something that he seems to like it for whatever reason. So
it's more of a distribution thing for him again, isn't it? Someone who can bring the ball out of the back and begin attacks. But
yeah, absolutely. And obviously, if you drop it out there deep, it allows you to split the two centre halves and then push the full-backs up. Which Arsenal like to do anyway, and when you have Bellerin and Monreal or Kolasinac or whoever it is, they are attacking players and they like to be able to be on the offensive and be on the front foot. They don't want to be defending all the time.
The fullbacks serve as our width anyway. They always have, or for the last 10 years or so, they've seemed to have done so.
Yeah, no, that's been very normal for Arsenal, is for the fullback to bomb on, even in a back four. If you think it'll be a back three then, do you think that Ramsey will be rushed back into midfield, or do you think it'll be the Xhaka-Wiltshire partnership of recent weeks?
See, this is where I have a bit of an issue. We alluded to the fact that Wenger's very cautious in bringing players back from injury, but all the noise he's making sounds like he's going to bring Ramsey straight back in. We're all very aware of Ramsey's brilliant moments at Wembley. But personally, for me, it's a cup final, so it's a case of, do you play your best 11? And he is one of our best 11 players. Or do you keep him and bring him on at half time or after 60 minutes or 70 minutes, depending on how the game is going? Me personally, I wouldn't start him. I would go with Xhaka and Wilshere. And
right.
Ozil and Aubameyang and someone else with them. But
would you be tempted to put Wilshere or Ramsey in that someone else role in the front three?
He could be. Although, as we alluded to in the first part of the podcast, it might be a case of he plays Iwobi simply to say, right, you know, Kyle Walker, just try and negate him going forward, or give support to Kolasinac or Monreal or whoever on that side. Or that might be how he looks at it. Or he might play Mohamed Elneny and we might have very two deeper lying midfielders in Elneny and Xhaka.
That's what I think he'll do. I think he'll either play Xhaka, Wilshere, Ramsey midfield three, or Elneny, Xhaka, Wilshere midfield three, depending on Ramsey's fitness. It seems as if Ramsey will be available. That's the kind of thing that Wenger has been saying. I know he said he's got to face a late fitness test, so that may be just to determine his actual sharpness. But it feels like if he's available, so maybe he'll go Xhaka, Wilshere, Ramsey. But I think if Ramsey's only good enough for the bench, I reckon Elneny will play, potentially in that floating role, as I mentioned, or just as an outright defensive midfielder with Xhaka pushed a little bit higher up the field. And I think Iwobi will play on the left-hand side, primarily, like you said, to counteract Kyle Walker, because Walker's so physical, so athletic, so quick. If you were to play Ramsey out there, or Wiltshire out there, or Ozil out there, any of those type of players, they would struggle with dealing when Walker makes those marauding runs forward. In Iwobi or Danny Welbeck have that physicality and the athleticism and the engine to be able to match him bombarding up and down the field.
I mean, for me, that's one of the reasons why I would go with a back three or a back five, depending on how you look at it, is while Kolasinac is obviously not as quick as Walker, he has that kind of physical imposing presence. And he could go up against Walker. And obviously Bellerin's very quick as well, and they've obviously been without Benjamin Mendy for the most, for the most of the season. I'm not sure whether Fabian Delph is injured, I believe, as well. So it's Zinchenko who's been filling in at left back, and
or Danilo, possibly.
Or Danilo. So Kyle Walker's the main threat, really. He, like us, Manchester City use their fullbacks or their wingbacks as their wide players, and they're the ones who bring the width to any attack. But then they also drift in and play very narrow at times as well, saying that.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I would like to see Arsenal do, to play Kolasinac left wing back and play Monreal centre half. I think because it just gives that added defensive stability of having a third. I think the Mustafi Khashoggi Monreal back three is a very, very good, strong, experienced, intelligent back three that can be relied upon. I think they've proven that they can be relied upon. I also think it allows Arsenal to probably play essentially four central midfielders, where you play Xhaka and Ramsey, let's say, as the two natural central midfielders, and then you can play Wilshere and Ozil, or even Iwobi and Ozil, as the two wide players in the front three, but you ask them to tuck in as much as possible to compact the midfield. You say perhaps that Ozil stick on Fernandinho so he can't dictate play from deep. You ask Ramsey to stay man-on-man on De Bruyne in midfield. You ask Xhaka to do the same on David Silva, something like that, because that's where City's real threat is in their the domination and the control that they get in the midfield. Yeah. It's very easy to go 5 minutes without seeing the ball.
I mean, I was at the game when the FA Cup game where Manchester City went to Cardiff City, and Cardiff City, for some peculiar reason, tried to go man for man against Manchester City across the field. At one point, I kid you not, they had a back four. It was basically a nine-up. They had their right back, their left back, and then their two centre backs playing as a back four in that order across the field. I thought, that's not right. You can't have Sean Morrison going up against Gabriel Jesus or Sergio Aguero. I can't quite remember who was playing. But I don't think Arsenal can do that either, simply because I don't think I don't think the players that we have are mature enough to be able to hold their responsibilities. I think it's a case of, with Manchester City, because they're so good and because they have so many talented individuals, it might just be a case of, all right, let's try and maintain a team shape, and then hopefully we can build off that, defend well, and then go and spring counter-attacks, or possibly try and press them high up the field. That's another question that will be answered tomorrow.
Yeah, let's touch on that. I think the two prevailing theories are Arsenal should sit deep and try and counter, or press high up the pitch, or do an amalgamation of both and pick their moments to press and pick their moments to counter. What would you rather see happen on Sunday? Would you rather they play a bit more aggressively and on the front foot, or would you rather they kind of a Dr. Mourinho approach, I guess, would be a good way to describe it.
I mean, for me, it all comes down to Sané and Sterling. I know Sané is going to miss the game, but if Sterling misses the game, then I think, me personally, the tactics completely change. If Sterling doesn't start tomorrow, I would press them quite high up the field, because whilst Aguero is quick, they don't necessarily have the speed of Sané. He's not as quick as Sané or Sterling. Bernardo Silva is quick.
Especially over long distances as
precisely.
Well.
They're racehorses, the pair of them, Sané and Sterling. Yeah. Whereas, were they both starting, and by they I mean Sané and Sterling, I would have said, sit back and then go. But then again, as you alluded to, they're so good in the midfield, they're so clever. It might just be a case of they can escape any situation, and Bernardo Silva might cut us apart alongside Aguero. But me personally, I think there's a higher chance of us pressing high up the field if Sterling doesn't start tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely think Arsenal can't go the whole game without pressing City at some point. More because I think they can get a goal from it. I think if you're intelligent and you pick your moment correctly, you can force a mistake from Otamendi or from Danilo if he's playing left back, or Walker right back, or even Fernandinho midfield. I think you can force an errant pass and you can immediately be 3-on-3 against a defence where two centre-halves have split wide because they think they've got safe possession. And suddenly you've got Mesut Ozil and Aubameyang steaming their way through.
Yep.
But it's probably a little bit ambitious and a little bit naive to expect Arsenal to be able to do that for the full 90 minutes. Purely because of stamina and energy, it's extremely taxing physically, especially when City move the ball as well as they do. And City have shown an ability to be able to be a bit more direct, especially from Ederson's distribution as well from the goal kick.
He's brilliant. If they do, his distribution is fantastic.
He's like a centre midfielder, isn't he? He's absolutely outstanding.
He is what Granit Xhaka should aspire to be.
Yeah, no, he is. I've rather him.
That was nasty. I had to get in. Rest in peace, Josh. I miss you immensely.
But because of that ability to go long every now and then and accurately, they can evade the high press every now and then quite easily. And suddenly, especially if they've got Sané and Sterling playing, they've got we've seen many times where they have De Bruyne bursting through the midfield because they've gone long to Sané or Sterling and he picks up the loose ball and the other team are nowhere to be seen because they've all been kind of trapped into this pressing high up the pitch.
Yeah, and it's a case of with them, they're not physically imposing up front, it's just that they create so much space in and around that middle area of the field and that final area of the field because they spread so wide with their centre-backs and everyone is drawn towards the defence and towards their opposition goal or to the Manchester City goal, that there's so much space in and around the field that their athletes up front can adapt to the flight of the ball and bring it down, and then they go, and that's where Ramsey can come in and play a big part. Is his engine, or Elneny's engine, could track up and down and up and down, and Iwobi again could do the same thing. But we'll see. I'm excited. The more and more I'm talking about it, the more excited I'm getting.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited for it. I'm intrigued to see what will happen because I think Wenger, even with Mkhitaryan, Kuktide, Lacazette injured, Welbeck a little bit rusty and out of form and other players not quite on it, and the likes of Walcott, Giroud and Sanchez all now gone, he still has quite a lot of options, and they may not be brilliant options, but there is still quite a lot of there's just a lot of avenues that he could go down with his team selection, which I think is always interesting because sometimes Arsenal are a little bit predictable, so we will have to wait and see. I know we had a few Twitter questions come in, particularly regarding this game, but one on Alex Iwobi as well. Do you want to swing them up for us if you can?
Yeah, as you said, a lot of the questions were relevant to the formation and how we'll line up, etc. I'll leave them. But the one question that I found very interesting is a question from Nikki Softtouch, which is a great name on Twitter. And then his at is Damu54, and he asks, how and why is Iwobi getting so many first team minutes? Which, considering his form, is a fair question. But then again, as you alluded to, we don't have many options really up front now because of the fact that we've sold Giroud and Walcott and Alexis. It's simply a case of he's the next man up. And as we alluded to again earlier in the programme, a couple of years ago, he was the next big thing, or maybe that's a bit strong, but he was the next big thing coming out of the academy. He was playing well. The game at Everton immediately springs to mind, or his goal against Everton immediately springs to mind. Yeah. But now he's a bit of a scapegoat. So it's a case for him of, I've argued for a little while that perhaps a loan deal may be beneficial for him. But then again, a loan deal is very difficult, especially when Arsenal are so rigid throughout their academy in terms of how they play. George Bird has made this point numerous times. And then I keep thinking of Serge Gnabry being sent off to West Brom. As in, I couldn't think of a worse team for an Arsenal player to go to. Especially under, I believe it was Tony Pulis who was manager there at the time.
Yeah, no, it was.
And an attacking player at that as well. Defender, I can understand. An attacking player like Gnabry? No, not really. But Iwobi, I think, much like Callum Chambers, give him time, possibly. Again, that could be seen in as an excuse. But we know what his qualities are. He can be very good with his intricate passing around the box. He just needs to improve his decision-making, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Iwobi is better than most people give him credit for, certainly at the moment. And I don't think he's playing as badly as a lot of people say. Having said that, and this is probably the main reason why I feel like he's getting more game time. Who else do you turn to? There aren't.
I mean, exactly. But the thing is,
at the moment, it's Iwobi or Welbeck.
I mean,
it,
but
really?
Even earlier in the season, it wasn't Walcott, it wasn't Giroud, it was Iwobi. Wenger obviously rates him really highly. And it's this horrible paradox, or paradox might not be the right word, but it's this horrible situation whereby teams are encouraged to play their kids and their academy talents, but then it's a case of, well, if they're not good enough, you can't play them. You shouldn't play them. He's a player who's shown not enough, admittedly, that he is good enough. But he needs to become a lot more consistent moving forward, because in a few years, Mesut Ozil might realise the mistake he made in signing a new deal. Aubameyang might have realised his mistake of coming here. And he may be a core part of the team. But we can't... This is where I take an issue with the criticism online, is if you continue to throw death threats at him and say, you're only in the team because of your uncle. It's a bit like, come off it. Like... We're very fickle as fans.
No,
things can
agree.
Change. I mean, if Welbeck scores the winner against Man City tomorrow, I would laugh and laugh.
Yes, there'll be a few people eating their words, won't there?
Yeah, I'm...
I think, like we were saying with Welbeck and the fact that he's probably a role player, I think that's what Iwobi is at the moment.
Yeah.
And then Wenger hopes that he may develop into something more in the next 2 or 3 years as Ozil ages, potentially leaves, maybe as, you know, Aubameyang leaves or whatever, and or Mkhitaryan, if he falls off or whatever, that Iwobi then becomes the creative fulcrum of his team. But for now, he's just a role player. Mm. And actually, I'm quite happy with him being role player. I don't think he's as bad as a lot of people say. Having said that, he's still not playing well enough to demand more game time. He's not somebody who should be playing every single game when everybody's fit. I think it's quite acceptable for him to play when there are injuries or when, you know, Mkhitaryan's cup tied or in the Europa League. But I think if everybody's fit, I don't think he gets into the starting 11. And I don't think he should get into the starting 11. But when, as a role player, injuries or suspensions come, I think it's quite acceptable to have him in that team. And I think Sunday he may play. I think he probably will play. And I think that's why. Certainly, I don't think he'd be starting ahead of Mkhitaryan if Mkhitaryan wasn't cup-tied, for example.
I completely agree. And again, I'll refer to the point I made just a few moments ago. I mean, the only way that players learn and they develop is through playing games and by playing minutes, as in he's had plenty of minutes. Consistency is his issue, along with decision making. So hopefully those flaws are ironed out sooner rather than later. But again, I'm hopeful that his talent comes through. Yeah, just it's weird. I'm always in this very glum mood when discussing Arsenal at the moment, simply because I seem to be a reflection of the entire fan base. Everything's a bit doom and gloom. And then as soon as we win, surprisingly, I'll be on cloud nine.
Yeah. Yes, it is a bit of an odd time. Certainly if Arsenal win tomorrow, there'll be a far
Would
happier
feeling. Would that be Wenger's first League Cup?
Feeling. Yes, yeah. He's never won. I think I read a stat. He'd be about the eighth manager in English football to win the three... to win the Premier League, the FA Cup, and the League Cup, or the Carabao Cup, or the Carling Cup, or the what was it the Coca Cola Cup? Was it called the Worthington's Cup or something in the early 2000s?
Possibly
something like that. It's been called everything under the sun.
Hasn't it?
We'll have to see. I'm very excited. I'm very nervous. I think Arsenal could. Yeah, could really get it handed to him, but we never know. This is Arsenal. This is Arsenal at Wembley. They're a different team at Wembley.
Yeah.
Well, we're not playing an Arsenal derby there. Different team at Wembley.
I want kickoff now. Forget 24 hours or so. Just I want it now.
Yes, me too. Is there anything else that you want to discuss before we sign off?
No, not really. Although my hashtag final comment for today will be keep the faith in the players and the team. I'm not,
the
but
manager?
Let's just keep the faith.
In the manager?
Different story.
Yeah.
I mean, I respect him as an individual, but I think it's time for new ideas. But I'm not going to comment further on that.
So keep some faith.
Keep relative faith,
is Henry's final comment. Keep relative faith. Well, thank you very much for listening. This was episode 20 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. Me and Henry made it. I don't know where Josh is. Maybe he'll make it for 21. We'll have to see. We will see you probably next week at some point. We actually play City again on Thursday. Which is a bit of a daunting.
Yeah, we beat you. Lost. Oh, great.
A bit of a daunting prospect. So we will speak to you next week at some point. We've not quite discussed when that will be, but we'll be sure to be in contact with you. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter as always. Please, leave us ratings and reviews and ask us loads of questions. We always try and answer them on the programme. Let's hope that Arsenal have another wonderful, wonderful travel to Wembley. I'm somewhat hesitant that will be the case, but we never know. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.